as is the case with the local team's defense, there are times in life when we see loved ones struggle, especially as they get older. The exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Kondorian Murad, will guide you through the process of managing a healthcare or financial power of attorney, even securing guardianship when needed for a family member. Schedule free consultation right now with their elder law and estate planning attorneys today. You can do that by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. As we wind the show down here on the Monday after a Commanders loss, they're still in first place. They're 4-2. They get the gift that should be the Carolina Panthers coming to town on Sunday. Let's remind you of some things maybe that have gone under the radar today. It's time for Don't Forget About. Danny, don't forget that Zach Ertz had a huge second half.
Mm-hmm.
4 catches for 68 yards, and your beloved catch and fall guy even made a play after the catch.
That was unbelievable.
He rumbled, made a guy miss.
He moved forward.
He might have had like 8 yards after the reception on that play.
He now has a total of 8 this year.
Don't forget.
Don't forget. This is one bad don't forget. So don't forget about this. There was a drop pass by Olamide Zaccheaus. He's been pretty sure-handed it's going to happen. It just ended up happening in a tight game at a bad time. Could have been a first down or close to it. Changed the following play calls. Baltimore, this was when the game was 3-3. This was in Baltimore territory. Washington has to then go on and punt because it's a little bit too long for even the great Austin Seibert to kick a long field goal. And then Baltimore had one of their 90-plus yard drives where they walked down and took control of the game. Who knows if it's different if Washington ends up scoring there or having a bit more, but that ended up being a huge hidden play in this game.
Don't forget about the PI that Noah Brown drew in a 4-catch, 58-yard performance. We've talked a lot about Terry McLaurin's gem, and I thought he was marvelous coming off of what was a really poor game by his standards with a drop touchdown and a lost fumble a week earlier. But I thought Noah Brown continued to secure his spot on the depth chart as the wide receiver too. He does a lot of good things with his size. He made an outstanding catch where he was parallel to the ground, right on the boundary on the chalk, basically, to set up the field goal at the end of the half. I am a big, big fan of Noah Brown.
Don't forget about how well Washington's offensive line moves around, right? Where you get some of these quick, whether it's a tunnel screen, bubble screen, or a flea flicker screen, back to Austin Ekeler. These guys are getting out and blocking without having the constant ineligible man downfield penalty that now plagues every single forward pass, it seems like, in the NFL. Every RPO, every screen pass is an ineligible man downfield. Washington's guys are disciplined. They're waiting and doing it and then moving at the appropriate time. I've been really impressed with how athletic this group is, in addition to being big and strong and grading the road a little bit.
Don't forget that even though they had a field goal blocked, which makes this easy to not have front of mind, Austin Seibert, who's 15 for 16 at kicking field goals for Washington this year, made his 2 longest field goals of the season, was good in the second half from 55 in the third quarter to make it a 4-point game, and from 49 to make it a 7-point game in the fourth quarter. Big kicks. I mean, really, high pressure, on the road, long kicks, and he was good. He has never missed a kick in Washington that didn't get blocked. So don't forget, even though it was a mixed bag, I thought he actually showed he had a little more leg maybe than we thought.
Don't forget about the fact that Cliff Kingsbury, I think, is doing a good job here in this one regard. The complaint I always have, when the offense is garbage, it's not right now, but bear with me, when the offense is terrible and Terry McLaurin just runs cardio, he's not A.J. Brown, he's not Jamar Chase, but that's not an insult. There are plenty of guys that are not that. He's a good offensive weapon. He needs the football. Now, this play didn't go for anything, but they started a drive. McLaurin hadn't done a ton to that point with a McLaurin end-around, reverse, pop pass, whatever you want to call that. It was technically a rush attempt, but it ended up going for nothing. That's fine. Get the football to your best players. They're doing that. They major in touches, especially in tight games, with Terry McLaurin, with Austin Ekeler. Doing it that way is smart. If you're going to go down with your best.
Don't forget that Zay Flowers had 9 catches for 132 yards, and every one of them, and every yard, and every blade of grass he got came in the first half. He did not have a target after halftime. I don't understand how that could even be possible for the Ravens. Now, they didn't care because they didn't need to throw him the ball because they just kept moving it and scoring, and they didn't punt after halftime when the game was still competitive. But still pretty crazy that all of his career day came in one half of football. The Monday Night Football matchup tonight is the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets. I am a FanDuel guy. You guys know that. I'm going to put together a little FanDuel parlay right now, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you think about my predictions here, okay? I like the Bills to beat the Jets. I know it's a dead cat bounce spot for New York. Fired Robert Saleh. Ulbrich takes over. You got a new play caller as well. They're going from Nathaniel Hackett calling plays to Todd Downing, who takes over. So big changes. Hard to predict the game. I am going to go with the better team and currently the better quarterback in Josh Allen. I've got the Bills covering -1.5. I think they win by a field goal. I think it'll be tight. But I do think this is a game where if you are the Jets, you get back to kind of what got you here, if that made sense, right? Like, you're going to have the meetings all week and say, what do we want to be? What are we when we're good? And I think what you decide is, we're going to go down with Breece Hall running the football the rest of this season, and we're going to feed Garrett Wilson. So I will go over 60 plus rushing yards for Breece Hall as a alt rushing total, and I will go over the 58.5 receiving yards for Garrett Wilson. So Garrett Wilson, 59 or more receiving, Hall, 60 or more rushing, and a Bills cover -1.5, paying out at +357. Your boy's getting $3.5 for every one he puts in. I like that parlay.
I'm into that, right? You'd expect, listen, the Jets could not run the ball the way that it was. I don't know that firing a defensive head coach fixes that, but they need to get back to that because Breece Hall, I promise you, Breece Hall is a good running back. You wouldn't know it by watching him run for like 1 yard a carry as linemen get knocked into the backfield, but there needs to be something to that because Rodgers is a master at handling the football and the ball fakes and things like that. He's got an advantage there. You would think you'd use it.
It just seems like a spot where you get back to what your identity is.
Let's have an identity.
Tonight could be that night. Dan Quinn has forged an identity for the Commanders. They play hard. He met with the media today.
Hey, Dan, can you update us on John Allen?
Yeah, so John has a pec tear, and it's a big blow for us, John. John Allen's honestly been a staple player, here in the play style and the attitude. So, we're really bummed for him, as the man and the ball player, and we'll certainly miss him this season. And he should likely get surgery, in the days ahead.
And then when you lose a guy like that, you drafted Johnny Newton, you have Darren, how do you replace him? What's the plan there?
Yeah, for sure. It'll be a multitude of people and roles and how we can feature guys to do that because John's rare and he's got unique skills and talent. So it's not just plug and play. And the good news, we got big, deep crew. And we'll feature all of them a little bit differently in finding the ways that we can do that. But, we'll certainly miss John and the strength and the attitude that he brings inside.
Dorrance Armstrong, do you also have an update on where things stand?
Yes. Sorry, I could give you some feedback. He had like a rib or oblique injury, and so they're doing some more imaging on that today. And Javonte Baptiste also has an ankle injury that, will – hopefully get some more information on that. The x-rays were negative, but certainly dealing with the type of sprains and things to go, so we'll take a good look at it, Nikki. But both of them weren't able to finish yesterday, and as they're going to go through the images and stuff tonight and tomorrow, we'll have a better sense for where they are in the days ahead. But definitely was a hard afternoon on the D-line on some injuries, and that was hard.
And with all those, do you anticipate bringing in some outside help to try to help fill the void there?
Yeah, we have, we're fortunate that, FA coming back certainly was one to come back off of IR and some other guys that are here within the program. So it'll be something that Adam and his staff and I will visit with about. But there's also guys here, for this purpose. And when those moments happen, are you ready to deliver? And the example I use most, honestly, Nikki, with the team is Jeremy McNichol. And his ability to step in and go, I think if there was a person that said, this is how you stay ready and your moment comes, you nail it, he's the one on our team right now that comes to mind first.
Hey, Dan, to talk a little bit about the secondary, you guys have used Mikey Sanders still more on the outside of late, probably just because that's just what you guys need to do for now.
Yep.
But you brought him in to envision him as a slot corner. Do you ultimately still see him at the slot regardless of how you're using him now?
Yes, I think that is probably where Mikey can make the most impactful plays, get a hand on the football. But honestly, when you're a good football player, there's a lot of roles, that you can fulfill and do that. But, Ben, that's still division, but sometimes that changes, you know, as you're going through it and you're just finding the best matchups. And I thought outside, this was probably one of Mike's best games. He's done that for, you know, two or three games now. And so to do that, I thought there were some good signs for him outside.
And so sort of to that end, one guy that is an outside corner is Emmanuel Forbes. You guys haven't used him much really the last two games. He's inactive this week. What at this point is holding Forbes back from getting on the field in a significant way defensively?
Yeah, and we'll look for that again this week, Ben. Really, honestly, we just wanted to add another defensive lineman up last week. Baltimore, I believe, had used the fewest, you know, three wide receiver sets leading into the game. So going in, we thought, man, we just need as much, you know, line of scrimmage help as we could. So we dressed an extra defensive lineman. So it wasn't performance related in that space. And as we get into next week, we certainly expect the man to, you know, back into the space and going for it in that way.
Just as a quick follow-up, does the fact that he's limited on special teams or maybe not viewed as something that can help, does that affect his status when it comes to active and active in certain situations?
No, I think it applies for everybody. You're right, in terms of the special teams and all hands on deck. But ultimately, like, you know, the spot for him is outside at corner first. And we got a big, deep crew on the special team side. So it really just came down, honestly, Ben, to they just had a, you know, bigger package of heavier sets of, you know, tight ends, fullbacks. And so that was the only decision, you know, regarding that.
What was the top 1-3 coaching point you had coming out of watching the film from today's game to get where you guys need to go?
Yeah, what was that for us to get to that space? Yeah, awesome. Well, I thought, let's start, you know, things that I liked first. I loved the on-field position. You know, we thought that was going to be one of the battles going into it to say, could Tress and the guys have some chances to change field position? They did. And I thought we also did a good job, you know, with the ball. And so those two things were part of the keys. The things that we thought, you know, really needed to change, you know, third down on both sides wasn't, you know, what we hoped we'd need to accomplish. The time of possession really got out of whack. And I think a lot of that had to do with some of the third downs and, quite honestly, some penalties on third downs where some drives were extended. I believe they were maybe 6 of 10, but I imagine there was at least two or three more on a penalty of two PIs. I believe they were either on third or fourth down. And then on the offensive side, you know, not creating enough and generating enough first down. So those would be, you know, one of the big takeaways of going into it to say, hey, in these moments, can we go get it? And so the third down was one of the big takeaways for us in this game, both sides of the ball.
And kind of more specifically, after you score that touchdown in the fourth quarter to go down 8, did you consider at all going for 2 there?
We didn't. We thought as we were into that space, we were still going to it. We knew when we were down 2 scores at the end that we were going to need to score quickly. At the end, knowing that we'd use the timeouts and get them before the 2-minute and then get a chance to go. So as lopsided as it felt, I think that was the frustrating, challenging part. Get the field goal, go get a couple stops and make them punt and go take our shot at it. I think that is the one that, you know, leaves us yesterday saying that's the gear we need to get to when it comes time to crunch time to go get this stop in this moment, even when it hasn't gone well. That's the one that, you know, you're leaving the field, you know, wishing for more there.
And you're coming off a loss, but if you look at the standings, Washington is atop the NFC East. I wonder if you consider that a realistic goal to win the division, and if it, even early in the season, is something you put out to the guys as a carrot at all.
Yeah, you want to put it out, not now, but at the beginning. And knowing that this is a tough division, but that's always comes first in terms of how you want to play in terms of the division. So I believe we've only had one so far division game. So as you go and you get into those games, you know, that's when you get to really talk about the matchups and why they carry so much weight. So honestly, we don't really talk much about expectations, and then we don't put a lot of stress on that. What we do put a lot of stress on is like how much better we can get. And it's just, can you get better? Can your unit get better? Can we do that again this week and going through the process for that? So we don't try to get jammed up on expectations or things are down the line or any of that. we just try to dig right into this week and say, this is, you know, we're based on improvement. It's like a lifestyle we live here, man. Like, can you get better? Can you dig in further? Can you get to that spot? And so that's kind of the stressor that we go, not on outside expectations. I recognize the question about the division because it is really important to talk about that. But you don't really talk about those until you talk about the division games when you're playing in them.
Sure. So just internally then, I wonder if that goal, that big picture goal, feels any more realistic after six games than it did before you played a game and you didn't really know what your, how your team would respond to stuff.
Well, I think we're probably also talking a little bit about like what we want our identity to be. And we faced a team yesterday that's had an identity that's been entrenched for a while. And we probably recognize, you know, the biggest truth, we're not where we want to be yet from that. And so before you can do a lot more, you got to get that part under. And you need fights like yesterday, man. I'd love to tell you they came in good when you're being able to pull some guys in the fourth quarter, but like, you need to be in these hard matches that suck and you're pissed at the end because you didn't make the play that you needed to make. But that's what an identity is all about. They're not formed like when you're rolling, you know, they're formed in these tough, close games. And we're gonna be a lot of close games this season, and I want us to feel like, hey man, we're down for that fight. And when it gets close, like, that's where we're in our element, and we got to be in those ones. And we took an L yesterday in a close environment, and we got to learn from it.
Hey Dan, what have you seen in terms of Federian's development over his first six games, in terms of him maybe having to step up and take a little bit bigger role now?
Yeah, I really felt I can feel his length and the strength, you know, especially when he's at the nose tackle. That's where I feel like his best stuff is, the combination blocks. And so sometimes some of his best plays have been when he's taken two and it allows Luvu or Wagner to go. So it may not show up on the stat sheet, but it does show up in the meeting room. And so that's what I love, when he plays square and strong and he can get guys locked out. Those are the moments, David, that I see him. I saw it yesterday. You know, there was a power play and Derrick Henry running right in the A gap, squared, knocked the center back, holding him back, made a tackle. Like, those seem like simple plays, but they're not easy.
The other question was about Austin. You had some uncertainty at that position when you brought him in. What has his consistency allowed you to do in terms of deciding go, no go, and different things that you have to decide based on the kicking game?
Yeah, it was. It's a big deal, and you're right, because you've had a front row seat at you know, some of the turbulence that we've had into that space. And so yesterday we had missed the one at the end of the half, but no one coming back out. We gave him a chance that I think it might have been a career long going, you know, in that direction. And so we wanted to say, man, like, we have belief in you, and go hit it like you have, because he's really done an excellent job here in practice of being detailed and on it. So I wanted him to know that there was no less belief on a long kick than there would be on the next one. And so it was as much belief as it was, you know, this is the right call to make into this space. But I also wanted, it might have been a little bit of a stretch further than we had allotted to, but I thought this is the right time to push someone and to tell them there's belief there.
Hi, Dan. After week one, everybody was talking about Jaden and can't run so much. Let's see him develop as a passer. And from week one to where we are today, the improvements and the growth have been very visible in terms of him being a passing quarterback in this league. What's impressed you so much about his growth as Jaden Daniels, the passer?
This would sound unusual, but there were a couple of plays that took place in the 2 minute yesterday, I think both before the half and maybe even one at the end of the game, throwaways. And this was, you know, an instance where there wasn't much time left at the end of the half. There was a one outside to Austin where it wouldn't have made much of a play, Scott. And so in that instance, the better play, it's incomplete to go fight for another one. We still had a timeout that we could use. So the football intelligence that he brings into the position is really strong. I think all of us felt that early with him, but I love the fact that when he's in these spaces, you know, the 2 minutes at the end of the half, and then it wasn't quite 2 minutes at the end of the game, but we had to go score and get down the field to go, of like the decision making there. He did a really good job of, you know, taking care of the ball, the right decisions, where's the location. I thought some of the best rips of his season actually happened yesterday. and some tight windows throws. The touchdown to Terry in the corner of the end zone on a fourth down play was just fantastic. So I thought moments like that, you know, were ones that I said, okay, like, he's really dialed in and he's thinking about the ball and thinking about decision making, and like, that's not just throwing it well, like, that's playing quarterback well.
Hey, good afternoon, Coach. 2 weeks in a row now, your offense is Jaden is faced, rather, 40% pressure rates are higher, hadn't hit 40% the rest of the season before that. What do you attribute that increase in pressure rates to?
You're saying we hadn't hit that before,
right,
during this season?
40% pressure rates on Jaden before Cleveland, and now Cleveland, Baltimore, back-to-back weeks.
Okay. Well, I would say I'm not surprised by Baltimore. I would have thought Tampa would have been up there because I thought they had a higher pressure route, but maybe they didn't. I knew Cleveland would play a lot of man-to-man, and that was one of the emphasis during the week to go, hey, we play more man-to-man, you know, beating man-to-man. That would be a big deal for us. In this instance, I thought Baltimore had a good complement of both. They had a pressure package, good run defense to go. But I think it's kind of by game, Dave. I think that might be more coincidental than not, if that's what the numbers showed. We haven't dug into Carolina yet in terms of how much they pressure and how much they don't. But at the end of it, I do like that we have a big, you know, deep playbook, and, you know, however teams want to get down, like, we're ready for that. We like to tempo some, and that can help on that side of things as well.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
All right. You guys have a good one. We'll see you Wednesday.
Dan Quinn with reporters earlier today in Ashburn, the John Allen update. We already knew that. We made the news early here on The Fan today. We've talked about it a couple of times, but to hear him say, pec tear, big blow for us. Allen's obviously been the staple player here in his play style and attitude. Yeah, we're really bummed for him and the man and the ball player. We'll certainly miss him this season. That stunk to hear Dan Quinn mention that.
Yeah, you talk about production, and it hasn't been, you know, otherworldly this year for John Allen, but that's sort of secondary to what you're talking about. One, you just feel for the guy. It just stinks. He's finally in the middle of what he's hoped for nearly a decade now, being here in Washington, which is a good football team that he's now a part of, one of the leaders on, one of the guys that some of the young players go to learn from, talk to, etc. One of the, you know, the guys that's always accountable at his locker, you know, comes on with the junks and is one of the dudes that people want to hear from, one of the guys that you want to root for. To have it kind of ripped away just really stinks, man. You can tell that's a blow.
Rib or oblique injury, he said, for Dorrance Armstrong. They'll get more imaging done on that as the day goes on. They didn't have a lot of information there. And then Javonte Jean-Baptiste, the defensive end, not bad for a seventh-round pick so far. He's played a lot. He's done some good things. He had an ankle injury, was in a walking boot in the locker room after the game in Baltimore. X-rays were negative, so that is a pretty good sign. I liked what he had to say about Mikey Sanders still. You know, they feel like he's getting a lot better all the time. He was asked about Emmanuel Forbes not being able to get on the field and kind of what the future holds for Forbes. We're at a point where I don't need to be focused on making sure you get anything out of Forbes or Davis. If they're not a fit and you don't think they're better than the other guys, don't play them. They're not your guys, and they're probably not going to be here next year anyway, honestly.
Yeah, we're getting close to the statute of limitations on those questions for me. I'm still there. I'm still interested in last year's first-round pick being inactive. Is he ever going to be active? Probably not, but it's still worth a question or two here or there, but we're getting really close to, yeah, it's not worth asking about because the answer is the same.
Still a really big deal. And I tweeted yesterday that those two guys were inactive, and someone's like, so? I'm like, no. This should not be normalized.
Right.
This guy was drafted in the first round last year. Imagine had they have taken Christian Gonzalez, and he was their corner one, and they had him in St. Just, what that would look like. Big thanks to everyone who listened to the program today. Have a wonderful evening. Enjoy Monday Night Football with the Bills and the Jets. We're back at it at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Remember, we've got Trey Wingo at 3 o'clock tomorrow, and Austin Eckler joins us for his weekly appointment at 5 o'clock on our Tuesday show. Linnell comes your way with overtime next. We're Grant and Danny saying so long. We're back at it Tuesday at 2 right here on The Fan.
Thank you for coming.